12th of the Traveling Mages, your show focusing on the magic lifestyle, current magic news, and anything else we come up with. I'm your host, Jose Lee, and joining me on the line are returning hosts, our resident pro player, the amazingly Randy Gay.
What's up?
Our Indian Affairs correspondent, Kartik Patel, a.k.a. Hello. Steve from Customer Support.
That's me.
And what was supposed to be our prodigal son, but he's actually not even back, Lucas Morales. So he's supposed to be joining us, but he's running late. But I heard that he was playing for Mox, and he just lost. So I don't know. He's probably all sad right now, but oh well.
It's okay. We have one winner, so that's fine. Yeah.
So a lot of big stuff happened this week, guys. We had GP New Jersey. I was lucky enough to interview Brian Bronduin, a couple of days ago. And so we have that interview for you guys, but we're going to load that towards the end of the show. So all 100 people that are listening just for the interview, you're going to have to listen to us for the rest of the show. And all three of you that actually regularly listen, well, thanks for listening.
There is
no BBD interview. This is a trap.
Yeah. No, but...
So, not part of the BBD interview, why don't we just go to we're trying to make this a regular segment, Mulligan or Not. Is that the title we're coming up with?
I think we could come up with something better.
Can we call it Keepership?
Yeah, Keepership, something keepership. Like that.
Yeah, yeah, and we need to do this, we need to have the, what Brainstorm Brewery does, and we need to get some, like, singers in the background to do, like, a little intro song, that'd be great.
Sure thing, Jose.
Can we call it the Ship at Holla?
The Ship at... is that copyrighted?
Definitely not.
Okay, all right. So,
I think it is associated with, I think, some pro or something.
Yeah, yeah, from Channel Fireball.
Drake,
yeah. This is, yeah.
Okay, so what do you guys got for us?
All right, so we've got the Jeskai Stoneblade deck from BBD, the winning GP deck list. And keep in mind, I know nothing about this deck or the format, so I'm going to call out the cards and hope that you guys can give me some insightful information.
Oh, you know what? We should have asked them to do that.
What?
Oh, you know, the interview that doesn't exist on that non-existent interview, what we should have been like. So we have a hand for you. Will you tell us if you...
Whatever. We'll do our best. All right, so you got this Jeskai Stoneblade deck from BBD. This was... The deck's really interesting because it... And correct me if I'm wrong. Basically, like, what is it? Like, 2 weeks ago, it won an SCG Open. It was considered, like, super innovative, and no one's really been running anything like this recently. You've got your Stoneblade decks, but they're generally not splashing for red. So I guess, like, BBD really liked that idea and ran with it and, like, freaking won his second GP with it. So that's great. So we're going to go over a hand with it real quick and see if we can break it down and see if this can get anywhere. All right, so we got three lands here: Scalding Tarn, Flooded Strand, and Tundra. Is it Tundra, right? Yeah. Ponder, Spell Pierce, Jataxian Probe, and Umezawa's Jitte. This looks pretty good.
It seems to be like threat light, though, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, but I think that this kind of hand is fine in a Stoneblade deck. If we were playing like Delver or something, then you really start to go, oh, you know, I don't have a threat or whatever. But Stoneforge Mystic is your main threat, and if you ponder, you can like maybe hit it on turn two anyway.
And you do have Detection Probe.
Right, and we do have a Detection Probe. I think this hand's quite good.
You have a couple ways to sculpt your hand, and even in like a Delver type deck, I mean, people like Steve Menendi in Vintage will say like he has no problem. And in fact, he sometimes will make this his main strategy, is to be the control deck and eventually sculpt the game and your hand into the deck that can switch into the proactive mode. In a format like Legacy, when your opponent is likely or very, very possibly going to do something ridiculous, like, I don't know, reanimate a Gristlebrand on turn one or two, you do want to have a card like Spell Pierce available to you really quickly. So, I mean, with this deck, you're able to go, you know, Tundra, pay two life for Jataxian Probe, see what your opponent's doing, and then potentially live up Spell Pierce, or go ahead and do a Ponder and try to get your Stoneforge Mystic out there. So this seems like a good hand. I mean, yeah, it's threat light, but I don't think you need a threat this early.
I'm just going the control
that
route.
That being said, like, the Jitte kind of is a mulligan right there, because you're going to be fetching up a you know, an equipment with your Stoneforge Mystic once you draw it. So I don't know. I would have a hard time mulliganing this hand, like going down to six, since like this is a six card hand is very good. Like it'd be really hard to go lower. So I think this is a keep.
Okay, all right, let's do another one
with the same deck.
Yeah,
all right, cool, let's redraw here. All right. We have Volcanic Island, Tundra, two Swords to Plowshares, two Force of Will, and a Ponder. Again, very threat light, but I think that that's what you're going to see a lot of the time with a deck like this.
I think it's fine.
I think it's fine, right? Like, so you can Ponder turn one with no fear since you have a force that you can pitch to a force.
I think this kind of hand has gotten a lot better because even though it's only two non-basics in your hand, the format's moving away from Wasteland, as we've seen, with like Treasure Cruise and stuff. So these kinds of hands are, you know, exponentially less dangerous than they were, say, like 6 months ago. 6 months ago, I would have thought twice about this hand just because of the, there's no basic land or no way to get basics. But in this format, I would definitely keep this hand.
Yeah, I don't really think there's a whole lot to ponder here.
Wow. Resident LSD, if you will.
I don't know what you're talking about.
She's like, wait, was that a pun? Yeah, it was. It was a pun.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. What about we do the Infect deck?
Cool. All right. So second place at GP New Jersey was what I would consider to be a local to our events, Tom Ross. We see him a lot of at a lot of our PTQs in the Houston area since he's from Louisiana, which I guess won't be really the case anymore since he's finally back on the Pro Tour. So big congrats to him. Really happy for him. He's obviously like a super good player, and like it's a shame to see somebody like having to grind it out that's that good and like kind of have a string of bad luck. But he's finally got there, and obviously like a second place finish at a GP is fantastic. So yeah. He's been playing his trademark Legacy Infect deck, and which he's obviously like very, very talented at playing. So let's go ahead and take a look at this first hand, which is pretty silly. So we got Noble Hierarch, Invigorate, Force of Will, Daze, Blighted Agent, Berserk, Spell Pierce. Now I think given one land in this hand, this is like unbeatable. That being said, you can't actually cast Fading Mirrors.
Yeah, I think we're going to go back to the Carter Cattell pro tip from last week. Don't keep hands without lands in it.
So we're going to go ahead and ship this one and see what happens. If we're on the draw, we actually would be drawing a Wooded Foothills. So this would be insane. But obviously, like, we wouldn't know that normally.
Right.
All right, we're going to give this another shot here. Yeah. See, this deck is so weird because it's very hard to tell, like, what hands you can actually keep. So here's a good example of that. We've got Forest, Wooded Foothills, Become Immense, three Vines of Vastwood, and a Brainstorm. So you kind of have to think about how this game would play out, right? You, like, let's say we keep this hand, and we go turn one, Wooded Foothills. Pretty much want to crack that right away, grab our Tropical Island, and Brainstorm, and hope we hit something good. First off, that's a really bad scenario, because you could end up just Brainstorm locking yourself right there, and just, like, drawing nothing. But assuming we did draw something and it was a creature, it's not super hard to protect at that point. Yeah. So, like, this could end up being okay, but it's probably one that I would mulligan just because I feel like we can hopefully do better in the Legacy format. What do you think?
The problem with this deck is that I've seen... I have more experience watching the modern version of this deck, but I've seen that the less... You know, obviously, the more you mulligan... You know, and that's with any deck. The more you mulligan, the less your chances of winning. But more so with this deck, because it is a combo deck, and you're trying to get pieces together. That being said, I agree with Randy. Like, the fact that the forest is in your hand, and you don't have a blue source, and you have to crack a fetch to brainstorm, I'm just not happy with this hand at all. I think we could do a lot better.
This is like playing Splinter Twin in Modern, having like three Splinter Twins in your hand and right. No creatures,
right.
And like one Serum Visions.
Yeah. I mean, they're not dead. The vines aren't dead in multiples, but they're definitely not good in multiples, especially not with a creature, you know? Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go ahead and redraw and see one more. All right. I don't like this deck.
Yeah, One more time.
All right. I don't know how
to... Okay. So this is something we can talk about. Misty Rainforest,
not even
a forest, Blighted Agent, Tropical Island, two Verdant Catacombs, and a Gitaxian Probe.
So we have five lands here and one creature.
It's how good you have a cantrip. You have a cantrip.
So I'm going to be honest with you guys, and I'm going to go ahead and take the flack for this week. How did Tom Ross get second place in this GP?
It's funny, like I've even seen him stream a couple times, and every once in a while, like I'll see a game where he just does nothing.
Yeah.
And like obviously the guy's a really good player. Like I certainly don't mean to.
No, I'm not downing him. Slam him, but he got second place. If anything, I'm upping him.
It's huge.
He's got to be a great player. But Seriously, how do you do it?
Man, like, I feel like you have to have some really, really good variants just on your side to make this work sometimes.
Okay, so this is a little odd. And I'm glad you bring this up because I've ran, what is it, the last two Tom Ross approved decks. I ran his white-blue heroic and I ran his mono-red, mostly because I was being cheap. Mm-hmm. And both of those decks just had that feeling of I drew the wrong half of the deck.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be his specialty or something. That's he must know. He must be a pro at ship it or keep it because that's.
Well, I mean, he plays these kind of decks really, really well. The kinds where you have to like play a creature and then ride it to victory, or you know what I mean, like, or a slide deck where you just have to play small creatures and go under them.
Right, and it just.
Yeah, but that being said, like, this deck just seems really underpowered to me, and I could just be wrong, but that's just what I feel.
Right, and the way that these hands are coming up, it sounds a lot like the type of hands that I was getting in Blue White Heroic, and it just when you only draw enchantments or auras, and you don't draw a single creature to put them on, and you just groan, you shuffle, and then you draw again, and you're like, wow. I only drew creatures and not a single aura this time. I hope I get at least one Ordeal of Thassa or something like that. I don't know. I'm a little burnt out right now on those type of decks where you just aggressive decks where you just draw the wrong half.
Yeah, so we after redrawing several times, Kartik and I have found a hand that looks to be keepable.
So how many times did it take?
He will kind of invigorated our trust in the deck's capability to actually have a good hand.
Wow.
So here's what a good hand looks like. Inkmoth Nexus, Invigorate, Spell Pierce, Become Immense, Pendlehaven, and two Verdant Catacombs. So here you've got your turn one, I don't know, Inkmoth Nexus, I guess. Mm. And then second turn, you're able to... Yeah. The games with this deck, obviously, are very, very complex.
I would crack a fetch on turn two.
Yeah,
because of the Become Immense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This deck is just really hard. Props to Tom Ross for being Tom Ross. I just can't do this. I'm no boss, let me tell you.
Yeah, for sure. Why don't we talk about the decks in GP Madrid then?
All right.
Yeah, for sure. So this is definitely my format. This is Modern. I won my first PTQ in Modern and still think it's a really cool format. Some interesting things are happening with it. Treasure Cruise obviously is in the format and is very, very strong, but a lot of the decks are adapting to it, and some are even actually benefiting more from Dig Through Time than Treasure Cruise itself. The top four decks were Temur Delver, Scapeshift, Red-Green Breach combo, and Pod. So yeah, Pod had a really good showing in this event, which is pretty interesting, but not super surprising to me, because like someone drawing a bunch of cards like isn't something that Pod really cares about that much. As long as they're still able to go and like play a bunch of creatures and like kind of go through their combo, they're fine. They'll just beat you. So all these decks running, you know, blue red Delver or whatever with Treasure Cruise, they're doing all this stuff while Pod is just comboing off or just still has like five creatures on the table and they're just activating. So they have, I don't know,
Gravity Township
every turn, right?
Yeah.
So they just don't care that much. So yeah, three Pod decks made it in the top eight, which is ridiculous, but. The top two decks were Temur Delver and Scapeshift, and we want to talk about those a little bit. So Delver is the one that everyone was kind of saying, oh, this is the best deck. And Blue-Red was the version that people were saying was the best. And this one did the same thing, but just splashed Tarmogoyf with green. Also giving them access to Ancient Grudge and Destructive Revelry. It's pretty good. Obviously, Tarmogoyf is a really sweet card. It kind of nabos with Treasure Cruise, but not too much. Like, if you actually play with it, you'll realize that it's still fine. It's still, you know, a 3-4 for 2, which is insane. So I want to go ahead and do a sample hand of that and see what it looks like. I've played a little bit with Blue-Red Delver, and I've obviously had a lot of games with Tarmogoyf playing Jund and stuff like that. So we're going to take a look at this hand. So this looks pretty good to me. We got two Scalding Tarns, a Wooded Foothills, two Young Pyromancers, a Forked Bolt, and a Delver of Secrets. So, yeah, this looks pretty insane. You're kind of like turn one Delver, turn two either, you know, Forked Bolt or Pyromancer. You can kind of go anyway with this deck. Having two Pyromancers is pretty insane. You're basically on the aggro plan here, which isn't bad. You do have to keep in mind that, like, if your opponent has ways to get rid of your creatures, then you're probably going to die. But it's very likely that you'll be able to just overwhelm them very, very quickly.
What do you think, Kartik? I think it's really good.
This looks like just like Delver. Delver's just the strong deck, man. You got your fetches, you've got a burn spell, you've got, you know, Pyromancer and Delver on your opening hand. Actually, something sweet about this deck, just in general, really quick, I really like Thought Scour and how Thought Scour is right now. Because, you know, at worst, it's a cantrip that does nothing. And at best, it's a Black Lotus plus draw card. Like, that's absurd to
Very
me.
Very true. Yeah, being able to fuel Treasure Cruise is really cool. I saw our buddy David Runyon actually playing that in a Sunday Modern tournament with it a couple weeks ago and said, oh man, I can immediately see why you're playing this card and I like it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, to me, this is a keepable hand. It's actually not something I get super excited about because I think in a deck like this, you actually want a little bit more interaction because there's a lot of decks where that Forked Bolt does actual nothing. But at the very least, it's, you know, a shot to the dome that makes a token, potentially two tokens, which is pretty cool. And if that Delver if the Delver is not interacted with, then your opponent probably has a problem. And even if it is, then you're playing a young Pyromancer and then creating a lot of trouble.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of the aggressiveness of the decks has, in many ways, caused a lot of the list to shift. I mean, if you look at some of them, I think they're being a little bit more removal heavy, just so we can get rid of early Delvers and early Pyromancers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
But yeah, but like having that amount of pressure is pretty good. I mean, I would like, you know, a Spell Piercer or a Mand to pop up pretty early. But
yeah, that's my only complaint about that particular hand. I wish there was some sort of counter spell in the hand just to protect your beaters. But I mean, it is what it is. Two threats is nothing to whiff at too. Although, let me ask you this: would you keep that hand in game two? Especially going second, because that would mean that they could play a Pyroclasm or play Anger of the Gods.
Well, I feel like game two would really depend on what kind of deck I'm playing against. Mm-hmm. Against another Delver deck, I love it, because if they don't have a turn one Delver, you're immediately in the driver's seat. And if they do, I mean, you have one as well, but you also have your young Pyromancers. In the Delver deck, I feel like the threats are very important, and also you have a Forked Bolt in your hand. So you have a lot of options. Yes, you're right. Against like a Pyroclasm deck or something like that, I would be a little wary. But I still have trouble shipping any hand with, you know, Delver in its opener. I mean, that's why you're playing the deck, is so you can kill them as fast as possible.
Yeah.
A lot disrupting.
There's two things I have to say about that. First off, if you're playing against a deck where in game two, Forked Bolt is still in it, then it's definitely a keep.
Right.
Because Forked Bolt in the decks that it's good against is very, very good. Second, I mean, if you're expecting sweepers, then you're still keeping this hand because you're really only playing one threat at a time. Okay. And then you're just holding up whatever, right? So, like, if you're expecting sweepers, then you're playing around them. And this is the kind of deck that's very good at playing around sweepers. The Delver, like, let's say you're playing against, you know, Jund, where they've got, like, Anger of the Gods. Delver is very good against them. If they find a way to kill Delver, then you're playing Young Pyromancer. If they kill the Young Pyromancer, you have another Young Pyromancer. You're not playing both Young Pyromancers at the same time. You're playing one, and you're trying to generate a bunch of tokens and stop whatever they're doing. And hopefully you're going to draw onto something else that can interact with what they do. But even if you don't, you're forcing them to play removal spells. And yeah, definitely in like a game two or three, this is maybe not super good. But like I said, if it's a deck where you still want Forked Bolt to be in there, it's probably fine.
Okay, all right, very cool. Now, I have a mulligan story, and I'm going to make you guys cringe because I did keep it, and it turned out just fine. So talk about being results-oriented, right? But so I had a hand that was playing Abzan Midrange for the first time, and it was a practice game, so I kept it. And the hand was this. It was Abzan Charm, 4 Scrylands, and then two Sandstep Citadels.
Jeez.
So 6 lands.
Yes. Okay.
4 Scrylands, 2 literally all tap lands.
Right. Right. No, you know what? I think there was a forest in there. Yeah, I think. No, there was a Cave of Coilus. That's what it was. There was one Cave of Coilus.
Okay.
And so my logic for keeping that one hand, well, number one, it was a test game. So it was against Mardu Midrange. I thought, okay, I'm playing Mardu Midrange. He won't come in too hard. Because at worst, he'll play a Ravel Master turn 3, or he'll play Goblin Outburst. So that shouldn't be too bad in the early game. So then my whole strategy was scry my way into a threat, and then worst comes to worst, turn 3, cycle the charm, draw 2 cards, and then hopefully draw a card into threats. And yeah, it's next card was Keratid, followed by Rhino, followed by Soren. Now, I did ship a couple of lands away with the Scry, but it was just so amazing. I don't know if I'll ever keep that hand in a tournament, but it was kind of cool.
So I will say, in the time that you explained how that actually played out, Karnak and I have taken a second to do the charades of shuffling up and pile shuffling a deck. That is not a good keep.
Yeah.
No matter what the results are, you can never think of it as like, well, maybe I'll draw into threats, or maybe I'll scry into threats. You should not keep a hand in which you are scrying into threats. You should be keeping a hand where you're scrying away whatever. Like, maybe like scrying into lands is okay if you already have like a play. You need to be able to have something that you can do by turn two or three or something.
I'll give you that. With your opening hand, you know exactly what you're looking for with your scries.
True. That's good to keep in mind, but that's...
But at the same time, like, there's just so much potential for that to go wrong. Because, you know, I've played, like, Mono Blue Devotion before, and I can't tell you how many times I've, like, scried with Thassa, shipped an island, and drew an island. You know, what if that kind of stuff happened when you scryed the lands away? Like, you can get easily run over by, like, a Rabble Master, shouldn't be an issue. Which shouldn't be an issue for, you know, Abzan Midrange as much. I mean, you've got Siege Rhinos and things that are very good against that Rabble Master. But, you know, you could just very easily get run over in this game just by, you know, not drawing anything.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So you have six lands in your hand, right? If you mulligan that hand or you took away one of those lands, then you're not hurting yourself at all.
Right.
So, like, is this a good six-card hand? No, this is a very bad six. I would go to five with that hand.
Yeah.
You know?
No, for sure. And in the actual tournament, I actually mulled to four at one point. I'm very willing to mull, but it was one of those hands that I just wanted to try just to see what happened with it. And the fact that it played out, I even showed it to my opponent. I was just like, this is what you're playing against. Let's see what happens. And then so the victory was just that much sweeter, but it was completely casual playtesting. But yeah, it's just something that I had to bring up.
I have a good mulligan story from Modern. There's a PTQ I was in, and I was playing against Blue-Red Twin, I think. I think it was like game two or whatever. And I was playing Jund. It was a Modern PTQ. And I mulled to six, look at my hand. Like, this is not good. Mulligan it again. And he's like, and my opponent says, if it makes you feel any better, I've seen someone mull to four and win before. And I was like, is that a challenge? So I look at my five-card hand, and I was like, can't keep this either. And he's like, sorry, man. I was like, whatever. Mull to four. This is a keep. I have, like, my, you know, two lands and Abrupt Decay and whatever. And I just end up crushing him. And I don't know that he said anything afterwards, but I was just thinking, like, yeah, I've also beat people on mulls to four before.
So while we're all on mulligan stories, this is a little bit different. But at the PTQ that Randall won, he was playing against a Rug Twin in the...
I know what you're talking about.
In the semifinals. And in game three, his Rug Twin opponent mulligans to five.
This is the semifinals game three of a PTQ, by the way.
Right.
I kept seven already.
Yeah, Randall's kept seven. His opponent...
I'm very happy with my seven as well.
His opponent mulligans to five and shows a no-lander, and then immediately puts it back into his deck and shuffles, and then mulligans to four...
No, I think his five-card hand.
Right? Oh, no, so, okay. So his six-card hand was a no-lander, so he immediately puts it back and shuffles, and then draws a five-card hand.
At which point, Kartik, who was standing behind him...
Yeah.
Literally goes, oh, and then leans back in his chair.
I give back an audible laugh because it's also a zero lander. And then he immediately says, keep, and I'm covering my face. I'm so embarrassed. And
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry that I said anything. And I'm just, oh, God. It was awful.
So he keeps it, right? I'm on the play. So, you know, land and go, whatever. He draws, goes, like, taxing probe, whatever. And then, like, tech edge, go.
Uh-huh.
And... that's the only land he draws for three turns, ends up discarding hand size, eventually draws a Misty Rainforest, fetches for a land, and then at that point, tech edges one of my lands. Goes back down to one land.
Yeah. He immediately tech edges Randall, goes down to one land, and then proceeds to get crushed. But I felt so bad for having said anything, because, you know, you're just not supposed to do that. It's just not proper etiquette. But to me, it was like, you know, you can't keep a five lander that's zero lands. But he did. And
you laughed, that's just, you thought he was just going to ship it right away.
I thought it was an auto. And he kept it, and I was like, oh my god, I feel like such a douche, you know?
That's funny. Right, so, lots of news this week. So why don't we go ahead and talk about the SCG announcement. I'm going to rely on you guys on this one because since there's almost no tournaments in South Korea besides casual, barely sanctioned standard events, why don't we go ahead and you guys cover that?
Okay, so essentially the Star City Games Open Series as we know it, which has traditionally been a standard open on Saturday and a legacy open on Sunday, they're changing the format so that now it's only one open – like one big open 2-day event, and they're all going to be primarily standard, with a few opens of modern and legacy. And they've doubled. And so, what happens is that there's a day one on Saturday of the of whatever format the open is. You play the requisite amount of rounds, and then either top 64 or X2, whichever is larger. So usually X2 will make it to day two, and they'll play on Sunday an additional few rounds. I don't exactly know the number, an additional number of rounds, and then, you know, cut to top eight. And the whole thing will be live streamed just like we're used to with the opens now. And also the prize payout has doubled from being $210,000 to $120,000. So they're essentially like GPs now for the Star City Games circuit. And the other two formats that aren't being represented, so, you know, standard, legacy, modern. So whichever open format it is, the other two formats will be individual 5K Premier IQs that are run on Sunday, which is pretty cool. They're essentially like, you know, if you didn't do well in the main event, or if you rather play that this format, you know, come play on Sunday, so you're not, you know, not doing it, like, just, you know, wasting your weekend. But they give a very GP-esque feel to the SCG Opens, and I think that's what they're going for. What do you think, Randy?
There are a lot of people really complaining about this, and I actually think it's pretty cool. Mm. The crowd that it hurts, obviously, is the legacy crowd. And they're very passionate about their format, but it definitely helps the people who are, you know, not able to build a legacy deck, or the modern crowd, for example, right. People like me who love the modern format that would love to see it on camera more. We're going to get to see some more modern events on camera, but really, like, standard is the most reasonable format for people to actually get into. Mm-hmm. You're going to see more PTQs, more pre-TQs, more Grand Prix that are standard rather than modern or legacy. And getting people into the standard format and putting it on camera makes a lot of sense. And the fact is that if you want to play Legacy or Modern, you can still do that. And the EV of playing in one of those events on Sunday in the 5Ks is still potentially just as high because the tournaments are going to be a little bit smaller. So it's going to be a little bit easier to cash one of those than it would be to, you know, cash a 400-person Legacy Open. And the fact is that the Legacy Opens themselves weren't even nearly as big as the Standard Opens, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to get the same number of people showing up to the Legacy Opens in total, most likely. Like, they're going to travel to play these Legacy Opens rather than having, you know, only a few hundred people show up to a, you know, a Legacy Open that had the same prize payout as a, you know, a 900-person Standard tournament.
Yeah, my thoughts on it as, you know, the Legacy voice of the show is that, you know, I was pretty upset about it. I never like it when my format takes a hit because I used to look forward to going to the SCGs mostly so I could play on Sunday. And then I would play standard on Saturday just as like, you know, okay, you know, I play standard, so I'll do it. You know, and now I'm, you know, going to have to figure out what I want to be doing on those weekends a little bit more clearly. But, you know, I don't think that it's the worst thing ever. I do want to play in a Legacy Open, so I'm planning on going to the Indianapolis one in March. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's not the end of the world, like Randall said. Once you think about it a little bit, you still get to play Legacy. The turnout's probably still going to be very similar for the Legacy crowd. Maybe a little less because people are still in the main event and they want to make, they want to do well in the 20K. But still, I mean, you get to play Legacy. It's not like they're taking it away from you. This is just something I've heard. I'm not, don't quote me on this. But, you know, people are saying that, like, you know, the less attention, you know, all this attention that's going off of Legacy, off the cameras every week at SCG could help the Legacy prices, you know, and I'm all for that. I'm all for more people being able to play the format. And I understand that it's not really accessible reasonably to some people, and you know, that's a shame. I wish that it were, but the fact of the matter is it isn't. And so I understand why they're moving toward the standard opens.
The biggest downside about this is just the fact that I can't turn on Twitch and watch a Legacy Open every Sunday.
That's my biggest problem, yeah, is that I loved watching Legacy. It's just so entertaining, so much fun, and so so interesting to see, like, high-level play in Legacy in a format that's so skill-intensive. That, you know, it's going to be sad that you don't get to just, you know, on Sunday morning, I get to, you know, watch some Legacy, you know what
I mean? But that being said, now the Legacy and Modern tournaments that you see are going to be higher impact than those are.
True.
So they're going to mean more, and I think that's cool.
That's true.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the prices right now of these cards, and they're pretty steady. It's a slow decline, and it has nothing to do with the announcement. We saw a spike happen between, let's see, in April, around that April time frame. A lot of the dual lands just shot up in price, and that I think that has to do more with I honestly think is that people started trying to start testing for GP New Jersey and things like that, and so everybody started to get all their stuff ready around this time during the summer, and then a lot of the dual lands have been slowly coming down in price, and then there was a semi peak happening right next to GP New Jersey. But because what a lot of people were saying is that, like you said, that prices were going to drop, that people were already trying to get rid of the Legacy stuff because of the SEG announcement, and I'm not seeing it right now, just based on what I'm looking on eBay completed auctions and. And TCG is not a really good place to look at, but just mostly eBay. I think eBay is like a good pulse of where cards are at any moment in time, and I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing any price dump right now. I don't think I would want to jump in right now because the prices are just as high as they've been.
Yeah, and I think that if we're talking about pricing changes, I think that first of all, the changes would have to actually be implemented, which isn't for another month, right? And also, some time would have to pass. Because, you know, this kind of announcement isn't going to, you know, make a Wasteland drop like 20, 30, 40 bucks on its own. That being said, I do see the logic behind it. And, you know, I understand, like, where what people are thinking. But, you know, like I said, don't quote me on that. I don't think that, you know, personally, I don't know if I think that. But it's fine. I understand that Legacy is hard to get into. And I understand that Standard is still the most supported format by Wizards, no doubt. So I am excited still to be able to play in some of these 20, you know, standard 20Ks essentially, because, you know, that's just good practice and good tournaments. I like playing in tournaments more than anything else, and I think that SCG is still doing a great job and head and shoulders above anyone else in the tournament scene.
And that's the thing is, I'm not worried about it. If there's a drop in prices, like look at Goyf. Goyf's drops when it was reprinted in Modern Masters, it dropped about $10 to $15. And right. At that time, I was thinking, a lot of people were really skeptical. And my thought on it was, it's time to jump in on Goyf. And so I got my playset, and just because I figured it was probably the lowest it was going to be for a very long time. What happened was that price of Goyf shot up to where it is now because a lot of people started playing Modern, and that drove up the demand for Modern staples. And I'm kind of wondering, maybe this is what's going to happen here. I think there's enough hype right now in the format because of GP New Jersey. I think a lot of the TOs know that it's a very popular format, so it wouldn't surprise me if we start seeing more of it. And it just got so much good press over the last week. And then there was we've had two good Eternal weekends happen recently. So I think Legacy is still a growth. If you ask me, I'm bullish on it right now. If I see any particular dips happen, then I'm just going to go ahead and pick up all the other staples that I'm missing. I'm missing a couple of dual lands, just think a couple of bayous and things like that. I think it's going to go up.
You know, yeah, a lot of people are saying this is like the, you know, rest in peace Legacy, and this is the end of Legacy, blah, blah, blah. People always, you know, Magic players always Skyfall, you know what I mean? We're all Chicken Littles. I don't think this is the depth of Legacy in any way. I think Legacy is still going to be a strong format. I think that the people who play it are still going to be passionate about it, like me and others. I don't think the format's going anywhere. Maybe it'll be in the shadows for a little bit, but, you know, that's okay. We're all we'll just play Magic in the shade.
Here's what I can see happen. Let's say that Magic were ever to go out of business, or Wizards were to go out of business. First off, it's not going to happen because I think the IP is just too strong. Like MechWarrior, they keep making MechWarrior games despite the fact that the original company died a long time ago. And they even remake the tabletop game by different companies just because the IP is so popular and it's so iconic. So I don't ever think because of that Magic will ever go away. But if you think about it, though, if it was to ever go away, people are going to still play Legacy. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the game could go away, the company could go away, but people with cards and memories, it's still going to stick by, and you're going to have that very select crowd of people that if you can't play standard because there's no new quote-unquote standard sets, I would imagine that people will continue to play Legacy just because they're that hardcore in the format.
I agree.
Okay, so why don't we go ahead and talk about the next part, which is GP New Jersey, since we are talking about Legacy so much.
Sounds good. Yeah, let me go ahead and pull it up.
Yep. Now, we're still waiting on Lucas because he's still not. He's still missing. So, Kartik, why don't you go ahead and just lead us in the top eight?
Sure. We already did some sample hands from the first two decks. So, number one was Jeskai Stoneblade with Brian Bronduin.
Yep.
Obviously, like Randall said, he, took this notion that, Blue-Red Delver was the best deck. And threw it out the window and goes, no, I can play three colors. I can play Treasure Cruise. And I can make a good deck. And he showed that with the Jeskai Stoneblade deck. Stoneforge Mystic is still very good in the format. Then you got Tom Ross with Blue-Green Infect, his baby. Rounding out the list, you got Jeskai Miracles from Philippe Schoninger. The Epic Storm with Royce Walter. Blue-Red Landstill with Lanfan. Forge Master Mud with Joseph Santomassini. Jeskai Miracles with Philippe Braverman. And that's that's the top eight. And first thing I want to notice is that both of the Miracles players, their names are Philip. And that's insane. I just noticed that. That's hilarious.
It's a conspiracy.
It is. It is a conspiracy.
Actually, that was two sets ago.
You got me. Yeah. It's not like the metagame was wrong. Blue Red Delver did top eight, and then the decks that were strong before Treasure Cruise are still quite good. Like Miracles are in multiples in the top eight. The Epic Storm, which is just Storm. I mean, it's still very good. I'm really surprised. I'm very interested in the Landstill deck and the Mud deck. More than anything else, just because they're the dark horses, going to the event. No one expected Blue-Red Landstill or Mud to, be in the top eight, but there they are.
So why don't you explain how Landstill works for us?
Sure. So Blue-Red Landstill is kind of an old idea of a deck in which you basically play, you're playing a deck that has a lot of, you've got Wastelands, you've got man lands like Mishra's Factory that can attack, and now they play Snapcaster Mage and a singleton like, I suppose, Jace the Mind Sculptor, and you're essentially a control deck where you just you have all these counter spells and removal spells and like Lightning Bolt and things and such. Actually, Sudden Shock in this list, which is very, very interesting. Split Second is really powerful in a format with so many counter spells. And you essentially play Standstill and make it so that your opponent. Their options for player are very limited. They can either, break your standstill by playing a spell, allowing you to draw multiple cards. And if they don't want to play any spells, you can just sit there and beat them to death with your Mishra's Factories while taxing them with Wastelands. So it's essentially a heavy control deck that, it kills your opponent very slowly.
Okay, all right. What about Mud?
Mud is actually very interesting. Mud is a deck that doesn't see nearly as much play in Legacy, but it's a very big Vintage deck. And the reason is obviously is because in Vintage you have access to Mishra's Factory. Workshop. I mean, Mishra's Workshop allows you to have three colorless mana on turn one to only play on artifact spells. So it allows you to power out some very powerful artifacts early. In Legacy, your stand-in for that is Metalworker, which is a 3-mana 1/2. You tap it and reveal the any number of artifact cards in your hand, and you get 2 colorless mana for each card revealed this way. And that's your way of powering out very powerful big cards like Lodestone Golem, Kuldotha Forgemaster, Wormcoil Engine, Sundering Titan. Also, the Soul Lands, Ancient Tomb, and City of Traders, which each tap for 2 colorless, also help you power out these powerful artifacts that can, like Chalice of the Void and Trinisphere, that can make your opponent's ability to cast spells very, very difficult. I mean, Chalice can just, if you put Chalice on one in Legacy, A large portion of most decks are cut out. You can't play Brainstorm, Lightning Bolt, Swords to Plowshares, Ponder. So, you know, a lot of their deck does nothing. If you play Trinisphere, a lot of their cards that are powerful because they're cheap, like Brainstorm and Lightning Bolt, become 3 mana. And you know, it's not nearly as efficient or powerful. You can't play multiple spells in a turn, which is what Delver wants to be doing. So I like where this deck is positioned. You also get to play cards like Platinum Angel, Sundering Titan, Wormcoil Engine that, you know, once you resolve them in Legacy, people don't usually have good answers to these kind of big threats, you know, that happen to be artifacts. And so you go way over the top. There's also an infinite combo with Metalworker plus Staff of Domination. If you have enough artifacts and you make enough mana by revealing, you can actually untap your creature for 3 mana with Staff and continue to do this to make infinite mana. Then you can draw your whole deck, tap any number of creatures, gain an infinite life, all with Staff of Domination.
Okay, yeah, you know what? I just realized I've actually have played against Mud before. The Wastelands, the 4 copies of Wastelands were awesome against this deck.
Yes, yes, absolutely. They play 0 basics, so...
Yeah, yeah, very cool. All right, so what do you think the format's overall right now then?
I think that you know, Brian Bronduin really hit the nail on the head. We saw Rudy Briska's deck from earlier, the blue-red Stormbladish deck. But the problem was I think that deck, and don't get me wrong, it obviously won, it did really well. You know, it did obviously did very well. But I think that Brian really took the deck and gave it, really streamlined it, gave it a definite direction. And just tuned it so that, you know, it was less clunky and very powerful, obviously. If you watch any of his games that he played, some of them seem very one-sided. And he really just, you know, showed his mastery of the format and, you know, his skill in building his deck.
Okay, so pretty much the clincher, the red for this was for Pyroblast.
Yes. No. So, like I said last week, people are moving toward main deck Pyroblast. I think that's very powerful. Just having that one mana answer to, you know, Treasure Cruise, no matter what, is just very powerful.
You know what? Short of 2 True Name Nemesis, I have every card for this deck.
Go out and build it, man. It looks like a lot of fun, ton of fun to play. It's definitely something that I could look forward to in the future if given the opportunity and I didn't feel that Reanimator was where I wanted to be. I would definitely play something like this.
Okay, so you recently won your own tournament, right?
Yeah, actually, literally 4 hours ago.
Okay, and then, so what was that exactly?
So I went to a Star City Games Invitational Qualifier in Vidor, Texas. The format was Modern.
Oh, okay, I thought it was Legacy, so this transition totally flopped, but just go ahead.
Yeah, I did well in this Modern IQ. It was literally no people. It was like 9 people or 10 people. And, you know, the guy had already, you know, scheduled the IQ. So we decided to do what the IQ would have been. So 4 rounds and then a cut to top 8.
You cut to top 8 with, it's like one person.
Right. So one person didn't make top 8, which is really sad and a dagger, obviously. But anyway, I was playing Goryeo's Vengeance. I'm going to start by saying, I'm going to go ahead and tell the whole story and then tell you what I think about the deck at the end. I got into the tournament. My first round I play against Blue-Red Delver. And we go to game 3 and it's very close, but he ends up beating me by having drawn one counterspell after I have, you know, I know he doesn't have one for a turn. So he goes ahead and draws the counterspell to blow me out, which is fine. Round 2 I play against Burn and we also go to game 3 and something very unusual happened. In game 3, I thought I had the game won when I threw the Breach Den Emrakul. I attacked him, and he showed me Deflective Palm. Or Deflecting Palm. And I took 15 and died, which was amazing. Nothing like that has ever happened to me, like ever.
You know what? From what I've heard with Deflecting Palm,
mm-hmm.
Either people get insanely tilted or they think it's the most awesome play ever.
I wanted to be tilted because I, you know, started 0-2 in this 9 person IQ, but it was hilarious. There's like no way I couldn't like freak out and go, oh my god, guys, look, I took 15! Like, so I was a good sport about it, I think. And so the next round I end up getting a bye. Yeah, lucky Kardec. And then the round after that I end up drawing in with my opponent into top 8.
What?
Yeah, there it is. So we go to top 8, and my first round in the top 8, I play against the blue-red Delver deck that beat me in the Swiss. Game one, he beats me by having a counterspell. Game two, I go land. He goes tap land. He's very happy with his hand. And he goes tap land, go. I go, play my second land, defense grid. And my opponent's face just drops. He's just like, I can't win this. And I proceed to kill him on turn four. And then in game three, he was feeling a little better because, you know, he was on the play, so he'd be able to have a counterspell up on turn two. So he played a tap land pass to me. I played a land, exiled the Simian Spirit Guide, and played a defense grid, and proceeded to win that game as well.
Jeez.
Then I played against the burn deck that had beat me in the Swiss. Yeah, essentially, I couldn't play around Deflecting Palm, and so I just threw my Emrakuls at him, and he didn't have it this time, so he died. And then I ended up in the finals against the guy I drove there with, Ori Swift. And he decided that since he was already qualified for an invitational and that he wanted some company to the one he went to, he conceded to me and gave me the invitation. So yeah, I won the IQ. It was awesome.
Awesome. So when are you going to the actual invitational?
Oh, I don't know yet. Me and Ori have to plan out which one we want to go to. Undeniably, it's going to be a standard invitational. We just have to figure out which date and which location would be best for both of us.
Okay, so what are the stakes at the Invitational?
Oh, I am... Is it $10,000 for first place? $10,000 for first place. I think Tom Ross has won the last two in a row.
Yep.
There it is, Tom Ross. I believe it's two formats too, right? It's Legacy and Standard? Okay, so it's Legacy and Standard. Yeah, so I get to play, you know, Well, not my two favorite, but my two most practiced formats, definitely. So I'm feeling good. I'm excited.
All right, that's awesome. So we definitely want to make sure that we talk about it before you go, and then afterwards.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hopefully, I have good news afterwards.
Yeah, we hope so too. So what did you play anyway?
I played Gorya's Vengeance. It's basically the all-in list with the Fury of the Horde in the main deck. And yeah, I won the IQ. I got pretty lucky in a lot of those rounds, and I drew pretty good, like the scenarios I was telling you. But I really don't like the deck. It's people say it's inconsistent, and they say that because it's true. A lot of the times, I just felt like I was floundering, and I needed to top deck to win, which isn't exactly where I want to be. The deck, it's very powerful, and it can win on turn two, which are two very big pluses. Pros, if you will, but just the mulligans are so terrible, and there's a lot of hands that do nothing, and I think that this is not where you want to be. If you want to play a combo deck in the format, I would stick to, like, you know, Splinter Twin or Scape Shift, any of the above, maybe even Infect, which, you know, if you really wanted to play something rogue, but I really wouldn't play this deck, and that's my honest take on it.
All right, that's definitely good to know. All right, so for the next topic, I want to talk about South Park. Now, for me, South Park's a little special. I'm in that age group that South Park came out when I was in middle school. So it was that totally taboo show that we weren't supposed to watch, but we watched anyway. And then if I remember right, when the movie came out, I was in high school, and I was still too young to get in it by myself. So it was one of those things where it's, you know, we had to watch South Park because it was a very defining moment for my generation, but we still couldn't, quote unquote, get in. So we were just at that magical age, kind of like the kids, you know, the four kids in South Park. They're really young, but they're being exposed to all these adult things. So it's just like the most perfect thing, right? So I had a lot of high expectations for the Magic episode. How do you guys feel about that whole thing?
Yeah, Randy, you start. I got.
Yeah, I'm a huge South Park fan, and I think Owen Turtenwald actually said it best when he said it was very bad but enjoyable. Right. Like, it was not. I mean, obviously, its actual references to Magic were not the best. They weren't correct. they named some cards. They actually screwed up the names to a couple of cards, which is understandable, but. Overall, it's like it wasn't one of the better South Park episodes, but I mean, it was fun. It was cool to see our game get some publicity in pop culture. But otherwise, yeah, it was kind of
Yeah, I'm also a huge, huge fan of South Park. Literally, watch it every single new episode the day it comes out. And I was really, really underwhelmed. I thought it was kind of cute, and there were some parts that were, like, really funny to me because of just, the scene with when Kenny's playing against a kid, and it reminded me of, like, every PTQ I've ever gone to. There's always that one guy who's like, wait,
hold on.
I'm going to play a land, you know, that kind of guy. You know, and there were some other cool references, like near the end they started using Concept Art Hero cards, and just hearing, like, you know, one of my, you know, Pro Lake Ancient on like a show that I grew up with is kind of really awesome. But, you know, other than the novelty of Magic being on South Park, I think that the episode fell flat, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think they could have done a much better job. It seemed like it really was more of an episode about cockfighting than it was about Magic. And Magic just kind of got shoehorned in so that we could have Randy do cock magic.
Right, I agree. I honestly wouldn't have surprised me if someone just was sitting there brainstorming and said, oh man, instead of cockfighting, cock magic. And then someone was like, oh, Magic the Gathering! And then they just like butted heads until an episode was born.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it feels like. I really would have liked an episode closer to, and everybody's talking about this, the World of Warcraft episode. I mean, that episode won an Emmy from what I heard.
Yeah, that episode was really, really good. Not just because of all the WoW references, but because they kept actually the WoW references to a minimum. They didn't try very hard to like name a bunch of characters from the show, name a bunch of characters from the game. They didn't try to, reference any, obscure like quest line or something. They just took the game, used it as a platform for a captivating, like, story, which was, there was a player killing everyone on the server without, any kind of recourse. And they made it work really, really well. Also, like, the graphics engine was really good for that episode.
They also worked on Blizzard on it.
Yeah, the fact that they worked with Blizzard was really cool.
And that's the thing, I saw that episode before actually ever playing World of Warcraft. Uh-huh. And I thought it was a great episode because I was familiar with MMOs, having played right. EverQuest a long time ago. I was very familiar with them, and I was familiar with a lot of the conventions. And for someone that wasn't even in the World of Warcraft, that wasn't in on half of the jokes, like when they go, oh my god, the Karathi Highlands have been wiped out. At that point, I had no idea what the Karathi Highlands were. And so I started playing later on. And it just, but it worked. It was an episode that was good for both fans and non-fans.
Yeah, I still think that it's referenced as, like, one of their best episodes, and it was mostly because they made it accessible to, like, everyone. Like, everyone got the episode, everyone understood it, and it was, understood it to the extent that the jokes needed to deliver, and they did, and it was great. It was a great episode. And I think that's what I wanted from this episode of Magic on South Park, but that's not at all what I got.
Right.
It felt more like they just threw jokes and words together to sound like, they were pandering to us, which they were. But it didn't go nearly as well as I hoped.
Yeah, and I actually heard some people in the community say things like, "Well, at least they didn't make fun of us." And it's just like, no, that's the whole point.
Yeah, I would have rather. Yeah, I wanted them to make fun of us. It would have been a lot funnier. And if you can't laugh at yourself, who can you laugh at, really?
Yeah, I wanted it to be a roast of the Magic community, and I specifically wanted it to be a roast of the Magic tournament community.
Yeah, it would have been a lot funnier if they did like their own version of like Crackgate or whatever.
Yeah, well, Crackgate would have been funny.
Any that or like our recent cheating scandal or anything, just anything that referenced us and made us feel like we were involved,
right?
Instead of just like throwing card names into an episode.
And that's I came up with an alternate plot line, which I think it would have been way better. And what I wanted to do is when I heard that they were hinting that Kenny was going to be a magic prodigy, right? So what I wanted to be was some sort of boxing story about the one guy who he's going up the ranks and then he has a horrible manager. So I wanted Cartman to be Kenny's magic manager and have him be like the Don King type of personality. And then what I was hoping would be some sort of doping scandal or like a cheating scandal. And all of a sudden, like, Kenny is being pressured by Cartman to win at all costs. And so what ends up happening is that Mark McGuire shows up and and Lance Armstrong shows up. And then Kenny tries to take advice from them because he's hanging with them at a party because, Kenny's a big-time Magic player now. So as he's hanging out, they give him some bad advice. And then in the end, Kenny decides not to cheat.
I think that was – I love it. I love your plot way better than what actually happened. It actually would have been like really cool. They could have tied in a bunch of different things that happened like recently, and throughout Magic's history in the tournament scene and pro play, which is like cheating and anything like that. I feel like the plot could have been literally anything, and it would have been better. But I really enjoy your plot. That's really cool.
Yeah, and you know what it feels like? Because I'm trying to think, what has happened in the last couple of weeks that actually was referenced in that episode? I can't think of anything.
Like Pearl Lake Ancient came out?
Right. But it just seems...
Just because you named some Khans of Tarkir's cards, like, it doesn't even... That doesn't, like, make me feel like, you know... They know us. You know what I mean?
Right, and it feels like it was a filler episode.
Oh, absolutely. It feels like an 11th hour, like, they came up with it on this, like, really off the cuff and didn't put any effort into it kind of episode, which they come up with sometimes and they work sometimes just because, you know, sometimes we just want a little bit more South Park in our lives. But, you know, I feel really bad because, like, and it's hard because we're Magic players, so we at least know the cards and what they're trying to say. But could you imagine, like, normal people watching that episode? Like, they wouldn't know what the hell they were talking about at all. And I understand that that's half the joke is, like, oh, man, they're all nerds, man. Like, ha, ha, ha. But, you know, at a certain point, it's like wouldn't somebody be like, oh, this is boring or, like, this is stupid. I don't get it. Or, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's not like you can just get, like, free laughs every time. Like, yeah, the first time they made the joke would have been funny, but they did, like, three or four different segments where they just had, like, namings of cards and, like, you know, they were, like, mock playing or whatever, but not everyone's going to understand that.
The best part of the episode was, in my opinion, when they were at their LGS. When they were just hanging out at the LGS, and it was FNM.
Yeah, I think that was really cool, that part of the episode. And while I was watching that part, I was like, oh, this could be good. This episode is going to be sick.
Yep.
And then it went downhill from there.
Yeah, honestly, once they introduced the whole... the roosters fighting. I thought, okay, this episode just jumped the shark. I mean,
I agree. Jumped the cock.
Yeah. Although I think that the best line definitely from now on is, "Oh no, Kenny! Shh, but he's dying."
Yeah, but he's dying. Everybody, like, you know how much life he just lost.
That was such a good line. That's the best line of the episode, I think.
Yeah, it was really funny.
Yeah, and
that specific part. I like that whole scene in the LGS. LGS. But I think it could have been done better.
Now, I actually found I was just looking at Twitch and just looking for a stream to watch, and there was actually somebody already streaming as McNuggets.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it kind of made me mad because I was like, oh, why didn't I think of that? That's perfect.
That's really sick, actually.
You got more of a free-range chicken.
Yeah, I agree. They don't even know what cards they want to play. They all want to play control. Yeah, well, screw the free-range then. I like that. I like the fact that they're like, screw the control players. That was funny.
Yeah, you know what? Okay, I'll give them that. That was another somewhat of a highlight when they were talking about the types of chicken.
Yeah, that was funny.
And their play styles.
Yeah, it was like the equivalent of like chickens to the Spike, Johnny, and... the last one, Timmy,
yeah.
It was kind of like that, but you know, and then they get to like the control players, like, oh, you don't want a free range chicken. They want to play control spells and make the game last forever. And like, oh yeah, well, screw them then. Screw the free range chicken.
right, yeah. Now, I do want to say something before some of the listeners misunderstand us. Don't, you know, at least me. Don't get me wrong. I'm mad because I think that it could have told a much better story, not because it didn't go nerd enough. And some of the criticisms I saw were some people that there were people that were actually trying to figure out what format it was. And once the consensus was reached, I think this was on Reddit. Once they reached a consensus of what format they thought they were playing, at that point they were like, "Oh, then that is totally an illegal move." And I was just like, "Oh my god, that's not the point."
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people are just going to nerd out, obviously, and there's always those trolls who are like, yeah, well, you know, they could have done, like, everything right and then had, like, a very minor error, like, I don't know, like he cast a spell, I don't know, just something weird, like, super small.
Like he cast played a spell, but he only had five lands on the table.
Right. Like they would actually, like, look at the video and be like, look, he only has five lands in play and he cast, like, a six drop.
Cheater.
You know,
cheater.
Yeah, cheater. You know, people are always going to nitpick and do that. And there's always that. And that's fine. Some people want to do that and make a joke about it. And that's fine. That's cool. Like, you know, that's you. Do you. You do you. But, you know, I don't have a problem with the people want to nerd out over it. But my main issue, and I think yours too, was more how it could have been better.
Right.
And, And I'm disappointed that because of the fact that this episode was like lackluster and mediocre, it closes the door on like future episodes that could be about, you know, it could reference like these kind of things. You know what I mean?
Exactly. It just felt like the opportunity was wasted.
I agree.
It was the Dungeons and Dragons movie all over again.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Actually, I never seen it, but it was terrible. Marlon Wayans was in it.
Jesus.
Yeah. So And then because of that, they destroyed the movie that's so horrible that it destroyed the property, and nobody's bothered to make a Dungeons & Dragons movie again. Like the Dragon Ball Z movie, which was also horrible.
Oh, God, that movie was just not watchable at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, crap.
It's like, really? Did you really have to stick Goku in a high school?
I don't. Yeah, that was gross. I don't even know what I was watching.
It's just like, what am I watching, Karate Kid with fireballs? What the hell?
Yeah, like, exactly. With, like, worse graphics. The worst.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I think this is pretty much it for the show. I know the listeners are probably dying to hear how the interview with BBD went, so we'll go ahead and transition onto that now. But before we do that, Kartik, any contact information?
Absolutely. My email still kartikpatel@yahoo.com, KartikPatel. At yahoo.com, and I actually have a Twitter handle that I've been using since Randy's been pushing me to, and you know, rightfully so. Since I have a Twitter, I should use it. It's at Kartik Patel. Really easy, super easy. I'm a dingus egg. That's my picture. I thought it was funny because it's an egg.
Anyway. Twitter egg. Yeah.
So I'm a dingus egg, and obviously on Facebook as well. Kartik Patel. Me next to Brian Cushing. Add me, let me know that you think I'm cool or whatever, you know, and I'll add you. Or you think I'm not cool and I'll still probably add you.
That's more likely.
Yeah. You'll tell me what you think I'm not cool, and then I'll try and convince you by adding you and talking to you.
Randy, how about you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at RandyG2008 or Randizzle on Magic Online.
Okay. All right, and then as for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Jose, J-O-S-E, underscore L-U-I-S, underscore L-I-Y. And you can also join our Magic Face group, our Magic Face group at the Traveling Mages. Just search for us, add it yourself, ask for an ad, and we'll go ahead and add you to it. We are going to be revamping our quote-unquote, what is it? Randy, what's the proper term here? You're the expert here. Our social media footprint, is that the right term?
Social media presence, I think you might say. We're working on getting a Twitter handle for the show, as well as an actual Facebook page, and possibly even getting a blog together. So look out for that.
Okay, very, very cool. So we'll be working on that. So, you know, please join us. The contest is still open for the cover art for our show. It's what's going to be displayed on the Apple iTunes Store as well as the MTG Cast page. Like I said before, if you send us something really cool and we like it, I'll make it up to you. I finally decided what I'm going to do. This is what's going to be the incentive. I'm going to send you 4 packs of Korean cons. If we decide to go with your art, and so I'll go ahead and send that over your way. And it's our little way of saying thank you, and it's the best way to say, hey, maybe you'll get a full polluted delta out of them. So who knows? There might be something pretty awesome in there.
I'm going to send you a stick figure drawing just so I can get those facts.
Like, it is a contest, Kartik.
Dang. Well, if I'm the only entrant, don't let Kartik win is what you need to take.
Yeah, there you go. There's your motivation, people. Don't let Kartik win. Okay, so thanks for listening, and we'll transition over to the next part. Thanks for sticking with us for part 2, where we interview GP New Jersey winner Brian Bronduin. How you doing, Brian?
Good, how are you?
Doing well. Now, would you rather me call you BBD or Brian or Brian Bronduin?
I'm fine with any of them, actually, so whatever you prefer.
All right, thanks a lot. Okay, so why don't we go ahead and get straight to the questions?
Okay.
So I watched the finals. It was very exciting. I was literally on the train in downtown Seoul watching as you were playing the final match, and I thought it was very exciting. But how did it feel when you won and took the title?
I mean, it was pretty amazing. Like, it's hard to explain. I've been playing Magic for a long time, and other than GP Louisville, this is actually only the second time I've ever won a tournament like this. So, yeah, it was just an insane feeling. Like, I couldn't believe that it actually happened.
That's really cool. Now, how did it feel to actually play that final against Tom Ross? Because from what I understand, you guys are very good friends.
Yeah, so that was, like, interesting. I mean, I feel like it was kind of a good thing and a bad thing because, you know, I was happy that Tom made it there and was happy for how well he did in the tournament. But at the same time, it sucks that, you know, we have to play each other and knock each other out. But at the same time, it felt like it was like a much more relaxed match as a result. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. Like, I think it was probably overall a net positive, but it was kind of weird.
Yeah, I guess it's better to for it to happen in the finals rather than round one, right?
Yeah, definitely. And we actually were pretty lucky because we were both X and one for a while, and we didn't have to play each other until the last round when we could draw into top eight.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, you guys play test a lot together?
Sometimes. Like, I haven't tested that much with Tom, but we've done a lot of like theory crafting and discussion together when it comes to tournaments, like some of the invitationals and things like that.
Okay, so would you say that you were pretty familiar with what he was going to run? Were you kind of ready for it, or was this still a curveball for you?
Yeah, I was definitely familiar with it. I mean, we actually stayed in the same hotel room, so I knew he was running, in fact. And it's a deck that he's run a bunch of times before, so it wasn't a huge surprise in that regard. You know, he always has a couple of spicy ones on his list, so, you know, there may be a couple of, you know, one-ofs that I might not have expected, but for the most part, I knew kind of what he was going on.
Okay. Now, it was a very tense matchup. There seemed to be at moments where it has to do with effect. It can just blow up at any moment. So was it tense the whole time, or was there a moment where you just knew you had just clinched it?
I mean, it was tense for a large percentage of the time, I should say. I would say that there was a point where I knew I had clinched it in game two, and that was kind of the point where he had started activating Ink Moth Nexuses and I was killing them off. I knew at that point that the game was over, but up until that point, it was definitely tense. Game two is actually a really tight game. So, yeah, it was just, you know, maybe one turn at the end of that game where I knew I had it, but other than that, it was real tense.
Okay. Now, with the title snagged, you're back again on the Pro Tour. How does it feel to be back on again?
It's pretty amazing. Like, I was worried that I was going to miss this next Pro Tour, and I actually, I've played in the last five in a row, so for me it was kind of like a huge negative thing, and I was like pretty unhappy about it. So it was really awesome to be able to, you know, re-qualify again. And not only that, by winning a tournament, I got a lot of pro points, and I might be able to hit silver before the one after it.
That's awesome.
So in essence, yeah, there's a good chance that it actually qualified me for two. I was really ecstatic about it. Like, it was pretty awesome.
Now, for some of the listeners that may not be totally acquainted, what does silver exactly mean then?
So Wizards has like different levels that you can reach when it comes to the Pro Tour. And silver is kind of the first – I guess the first level is nothing, but the second level is silver. And it gives you one Pro Tour qualification each year. And you can use it on any Pro Tour you want. So, you know, if you're not qualified for something, you can use it on that.
Okay. Now, on the actual list that you were running, you weren't running a Delver list, but more of an evolved Stoneforge. How did you go about deciding this? And how did you know it was going to be the right call?
I actually spent, you know, a week and a half testing – and I knew that I wanted to play Stoneforge, and I knew that I wanted to play Young Pyromancer. And I had a lot of lists with Stoneforge, and I had a lot of lists with Young Pyromancer. And then this was my final list where I was like, I'm just going to merge the two together. So, but I knew from testing, I had tried a lot of different things out. I knew that Gitaxian Probe and Treasure Cruise is exactly where I wanted to be. And so, in that regard, my deck definitely looked a lot like a Delver deck because it had probes, the low land count, the treasure cruises, and things like that. I just knew that I didn't really want to play Delver that much because I felt like there was so much removal for it.
Yeah, it just seemed that Stoneforge just allowed you to just hit that much heavier. Is that correct?
Yeah, like Stoneforge is a very versatile card. It's one of the best creatures in Legacy, maybe the best one, because it can just play so many roles. Against the other Delver decks, like, you get to go a little bit bigger than they do. So you just have this ability to just, like, by virtue of being a little bigger than they are, you get to, like, kind of win the game against them a little bit. Like, usually those slightly bigger decks are a little favored. But then Stoneforge also has the versatility of finding, like, Jit against Infect, which was, you know, instrumental in the finals for me, or Batterskull against a bunch of creature decks and things like that. So it's just kind of gives you so many options, just really powerful card.
All right, so you mentioned the Boogeyman, Treasure Cruise. Now, I saw a Twitter you posted earlier saying that it made for one of the funnest formats ever, but where do you really stand, though? Do you think it's right for Legacy, or do you think more that with enough data it should eventually be phased out or banned?
So I don't actually know. Like, I think that's a good question. I think that maybe eventually it becomes too good. I don't think that we're at that point yet. So I think that, you know, right now it's a lot of fun and I really enjoy it. And I don't think it needs to be banned at this stage in time, but I would not be surprised if eventually we realize it's just the best thing and it has to be banned.
Right. Now, how do you feel about the same card in Modern? Because now people are trying to give Treasure Cruise time and Legacy, but definitely for Modern, there's still a lot of people saying that it needs to be banned. What are your feelings on that?
I think that it's definitely significantly better in Modern than it is in Legacy, because Modern doesn't have the same tools to fight it. You don't have cards like Pyroblast or things like that. You know, you don't have all these powerful combo decks that can kill in turn one and two. So the card's just significantly more powerful in Modern. On the other hand, I haven't played enough Modern to really know, like, you know, is it too good or not? So for me, I don't know for sure on whether it has to be banned, but it's definitely more powerful there.
Okay, now let's go back and talk about your philosophy as a whole. Tom Ross, he stuck with what he knows. He's the aggro guy, so he plays an effect. Where do you fall? Do you play a list that you know, or do you decide to attack the meta?
I like to do both. So I like to attack the meta game, but I like to do it under the confines of archetypes and deck styles that I'm familiar with. In this case, like Stoneforge Mystic, I've played a lot of Stoneforge Mystic. It's something I'm really comfortable with. So I knew I wanted to do that and just play a really powerful card that was something that was really in my range. And I didn't want to get too cute. Like, you know, I could have played something like a Chalice of the Void deck or whatever if I really wanted to attack Delver. But I wanted to just play a powerful proactive strategy that fit my style.
So would you say you have 2 to 3 specialty decks that you play in Legacy and then you just kind of switch them out based on where the meta is at the time?
Yeah, generally speaking, usually I'm going to be – like Miracles is kind of my go-to deck. You know, some sort of Stoneforge deck. Like Deathblade or this Jeskai Stoneblade deck are also kind of go-to decks for me. Basically, like, more blue controlling lists is kind of my comfort level. But, you know, I've also played Sneak and Show and Storm to success. So, you know, I'm not wholly one-dimensional, but for the most part, that's where I like to lean.
Now, besides the finals, what other interesting lists did you hit? Play any lands or just anything just weird and off the wall? And how did that affect the list that you were playing?
Yeah, so I actually played lands in round 13, and he really just kind of beat the crap out of me. So, you know, that was kind of off the wall a little bit. I mean, I've played against lands a bunch, but I didn't really expect to see it that late in the tournament, and it was kind of a brutal match. He kind of crushed me. And then, you know, I played against Mud. There was a Mud deck that top aided. I played against him in Swiss and was able to beat him. And then he won his next round to make top 8 where I had to play him again. So that was kind of a scary match, actually. Both matches went to 3 games, and it was super tight. And I felt pretty fortunate to be able to escape out of there with a win.
Oh, that must be pretty insane, especially running against the same person again. Imagine how the other guy felt.
Yeah, he had to lose to me twice, so kind of rough for him.
That's pretty terrible. Now, do you have any crazy New Jersey stories?
So nothing too crazy about New Jersey itself, but I would say that in the tournament I had a pretty insane round. It was like round 8, and I'm playing the blue-white-red Delver Mirror, and it was just kind of I got so – like probably the luckiest I've been in a very long time. I just kind of – really insane how I was able to pull that match out. The first game I kept a zero land hand with a bunch of Gitaxian Probes. And I probe my opponent, and I see that he has a Wasteland in his hand. So I'm kind of in a bad shape there. And I don't draw a land with my first probe. So I'm like, all right, well, you know, I have to hit a land with a second probe, and he has Wasteland. And he had 2 True Name Nemesis, and my deck doesn't have a way to beat that card game 1 unless I counter it. So, and I didn't have a Force of Will. And I end up drawing off the second probe. I drew Basic Planes. So I got to play a basic so I couldn't get wasted, and then the next turn I drew a fetch land, and the turn after that I drew another fetch land. I was able to pyroblast his first True Name Nemesis, and then the next turn I drew a Force of Will to counter his second one, and ended up somehow winning the game. And it just felt like I was, you know, just super lucky to just draw all those cards in a row.
That's just awesome.
Game two game two is like more of the same. He just had this explosive start, and I was really far behind. And pretty much what would have been the last turn of the game, he had a flipped Delver, a Batterskull, a Jit, a True Name Nemesis, and a Stoneforge Mystic in play. And I ended up drawing Brainstorm and brainstorming into a Lightning Bolt, a Swords to Plowshares, and a Wear Tear. And was able to lock up the game that way. So that was kind of crazy to be able to win both those games when I thought I couldn't win either of them.
So the state of True Name Nemesis in the meta, it seems to be that used to be one of the boogeymen, and it just kind of has dropped off now. I mean, Wizards even went and printed Hate and Conspiracy for it. What do you think is the future of that card?
I mean, I think that it is a powerful card, but it's not broken because it is kind of underwhelming against combo decks. So I think that's definitely a big part of the metagame. You know, I don't think it'll ever become like, you know, just overwhelmingly present in Legacy. So I think that, you know, it's fine. Like, I think where it is right now is probably where it's going to be.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to ask this question to close it off.
Okay.
What do you think about the latest South Park episode?
You know, I haven't actually watched it,
but
I've heard a lot about it, and it seems like something I want to go and watch, just if nothing else, just to sate my curiosity.
So. Right. Okay. All right. Well, I shouldn't have said that was my last question, but that is my last question now. So definitely thanks for giving us this opportunity again. We really appreciate this. As always, you're welcome to come on the show as many times as you want, so I really appreciate you coming back on.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. No problem.